Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Hey, Truth Seekers, welcome to Friday. My name is Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. If you would like to get your comment on the air tonight, the number is 800-989-1480. And I think tonight we're going to make available a lot of airtime for your comments. Some very weird stuff happened this week, and I'm sure you have something to say about it. While we're waiting for your calls to come in at 800-989-1480, there's a couple of things here. Think Progress has this posted at their website. Today on CNN's Situation Room, Alberto Gonzalez, Bush's Tejano, and Bush's Attorney General, was asked if he could think of a single mistake he's made during his service to Bush during the last 6 years, including his time as Attorney General. And like most people in the Bush crime family, he couldn't think of a single mistake. These people are unbelievable, aren't they? Gonzalez told Wolf Blitzer, well, here's the transcript. Blitzer says, looking back on the decisions that you've made at the White House and now at the Justice Department, anything jump to mind, anything that you deeply regret, a decision that you made? Gonzalez. Oh, I think that you and I would, I'd have to spend some time thinking about that. Obviously, I'm not going to say that I am perfect and that I've been perfect in doing my job. Obviously, I've made some recommendations to my clients. Some of those recommendations have not been supported in the courts. In hindsight, you sometimes wonder, well, perhaps the recommendation should have been something different. Well, here's some suggestions, and they leapt into my mind, and they were posted at Think Progress, as some of the people responded to this nonsense. How about domestic wiretapping, Gonzalez? How about torture? How about the secret off-the-books CIA prisons? How about military tribunals? Oh, I know. How about torture? Oh, and let's not forget torture. He can't think of any mistake he's made. And then there were some more added, signing off on the State of the Union, 16 words in 2003 about nuclear weapons in the hands of Saddam, or the power to get nuclear weapons. How about the USA Patriot Act, Tejano? How about the signing statements that you set up for this moron to sign 750 times? How about no civil rights enforcement for your entire tenure? 4 cases, and they weren't even yours. How about no voting rights enforcement? How about not investigating Commerce Secretary Snow for treason in the DP World transaction? How about not investigating abuses of the War Crimes Act by the Bush administration? How about the mistake you made with all the people you've arrested as terrorists, like the people from Michigan? Remember the Michigan terrorists? Was that the group that had the cell phones? Yeah. How about the 10 Miami gang members whose only contact with Al-Qaeda was with the FBI agents they met who were pretending to be Al-Qaeda, who are now going to spend probably years in prison? No mistakes, huh, Alberto? How about trying Saddam Hussein in Iraq and not in an international courtroom like The Hague? How about perjury, suborning perjury with torture? How about that? How about no criminal investigation for treason and war profiteering by Halliburton? The list goes on and on. But this evil little mouse sits there. With Wolf Blitzer, and says, I can't think of any mistakes I've made at all. You know, I'm like George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. Everything I do is appropriate to the occasion, to the moment, to my deep and abiding respect for the U.S. Constitution and international law. I am Alberto Gonzalez, George Bush's Tejano. I do for George every day what Monica did for Bill, and I'm proud of it. No mistakes. See, with that kind of attitude at the highest level in the Bush crime family, do you have any doubt or question in your mind whatsoever that these people would ever consider doing the right thing or the just thing or the peaceful thing, or the thing necessary to do to find some sort of reconciliation, or, well, you know. Colin Powell finally found his voice in London. He was speaking to the Leaders in London Business Forum. That's what it's called. The Leaders in London Business Forum. Yesterday. And he said he doesn't believe the United States will attack Iran. And he says he does believe that the Bush crime family should speak to the leaders in Iran and Syria. He said Iran is a regional power and it will have to be dealt with. We should find ways to speak to them and also speak to the Syrians. And he also said he could not speak for the administration of President Bush, not any longer, right? When you could, Mr. Powell, you lied through your teeth, didn't you? You acted like any house Negro, whipped out of the fields and brought into the masses' house. Now you get out there, boy, and say this. Yes, sir. He says, we all agree that it's not a good thing for Iran to develop their nuclear program if it could develop nuclear weapons, but the United States is not going to attack Iran. He said he could not see any circumstances which would cause a military conflict between the United States and Iran. Now, coming next week, the Iraq Study Group is expected to call for regional talks as a way forward in Iraq, including involvement by Syria and Iran. Have you all been curious about what the Iraq Study Group is? Have you done your own research? Have you looked it up? Well, no, neither did I. And I finally got a link today to globalresearch.ca. Larry Chin, writing at globalresearch.ca, lays it all out. And I want to touch on this because this is going to be the big news next week. See, Bush, the twerp in the White House, says he's, no, we're not going to have any graceful exits. No graceful exits out of Iraq. It's got to be blood and gore. It's got to be people in boxes and children blown to pieces. But no graceful exits. Even his contemptuous use of that phrase, no graceful exit, You know, he couldn't say, no, we're not going to flee. We're not going to retreat. We're not going to, what's the Sean Hannity favorite? Cut and run. We're not going to cut and run. But no, he has to use that smarmy, bullyish sarcasm. No graceful exits. Well, you might be curious as to who the Iraq Study Group is, and in a moment here we'll get into it. Which brings up one other thing for me. I, like possibly like you, am well aware that there are so many issues that need to be addressed, the subject of which is just blown away every day by this murder, this continuing, ongoing murder in Iraq and the occupied territories in Israel and Lebanon and the whole Middle East, just ready to explode, just ready to blow into a million pieces. And I just wish there was some way that we could maybe when the new Congress seats itself, the new House and Senate, after the first of the year, maybe there will be a possibility of our discussing subjects other than this hideous occupation. I don't know. You think? All right, stick around. When we come back, just some quick information on the Iraq Study Group, and then your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Get our hands on that greasy, slimy stuff.
This is Air America Phoenix, 1480 KPHX Phoenix, a Nova M network station.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, if Colin Powell or Colin Powell would have spoken up as the United States' Secretary of State back when he had he was on the world stage at the United Nations, he knew damn good and well that what he was talking about were lies. Those videos of Negroponte sitting behind him and who was the other one? Tenet sitting behind him. Two murderous liars. Colin Powell is not a moron. He's not ignorant. He knew damn good and well when he sat there and talked about, well, there are weapons of mass destruction in palm tree groves. Jesus, God, what did they do to him to get him to say that? Offer him positions of power and glory? Come on, Colin, you'll be the first black Secretary of State. Come on, man. Damn. So now he's trying to get all truthful. A little bit late, Colin. A little bit late. So like me lie, right, Colin? When you were a colonel, I think you were a colonel back then, or were you a captain? I don't know, or major. I know you got advanced because you played along and you kept it quiet for 2 years. God, I hate these people. The Iraq Study Group. This is thanks to Larry Chin. Is a bipartisan task force, that's how it's being billed, created by the U.S. Congress in response to the failure of the Bush administration to better manage the occupation of Iraq. Mainstream media reporting and official statements from Washington have characterized the ISG, the Iraq Study Group, as proof of a, quote, shift toward diplomacy, end quote, in the Middle East. Now, these same reports cite the sponsorship of the so-called U.S. Institute for Peace. That's who's sponsoring the Iraq Study Group, as evidence that the Iraq Study Group represents a change of course. In fact, the ISG is another official damage control apparatus, spearheaded by notorious Western political and corporate elites, former military intelligence officers, and so-called experts from right-wing and intelligence-connected Western think tanks, one of which is the U.S. Institute for Peace itself. Now, what is the U.S. Institute for Peace, first of all? Because that's the sponsor of the Iraq Study Group. And USIP's directors and members feature prominently throughout the ISG's panels. As Larry Chin writes, despite its insistence that it's an independent and nonpartisan body, the U.S. Institute for Peace itself is a policy group that functions as an arm of the U.S. government and as a U.S. intelligence/propaganda apparatus. The U.S. Institute for Peace, the members are appointed by the President of the United States and confirmed and funded by Congress. The rotating membership of the U.S. Institute for Peace consists primarily of elites, including so-called retired Washington politicians and Pentagon officials. Now, named in true Orwellian fashion, the Institute for Peace is a harbor for elite managers of global warfare. Its former members have included the most notorious war criminals in modern history from the United States, among them Dick Cheney, Frank Carlucci, Caspar Weinberger, and Stephen Hadley. The Iraq Study Group is charged with bringing so-called fresh eyes to the Middle East conflict. However, one glance at the directors of the ISG should remove any illusions. The ISG's leaders are world-renowned American Cold Warriors, each of whom played major roles in the crimes of the Reagan, Bush, and the Clinton administrations. These are very old eyes, or not fresh eyes, on very blood-soaked globalists who seek to fine-tune, perfect, and expand the war, not end it. The co-chairs, James Baker III and Lee Hamilton. As Larry Chin writes, the chairmanship by this tag team of war criminals itself promises more of the same. Former Secretary of State Baker's deep and extensive political and business connections to the Bush family and high-level role in the Bush and Reagan-Bush administrations is well known. It was Baker who personally intervened to install George W. Bush as president in 2000. It was Baker, member of the Carlyle Group, who laid the groundwork behind 9/11 and the war on terrorism. It is James Baker Institute for Public Policy that pushes many aspects of an oil and petrodollar conquest. Now it's Baker coming to George W. Bush's aid again with so-called better ideas by way of George Herbert Walker Bush, Brent Scowcroft, and Henry Kissinger, the old guard in this filthy family. Lee Hamilton is co-chair of the infamous 9/11 Commission, which is an obvious cover-up. Hamilton's role with the Iraq Study Group marks his third chairmanship of official cover-ups. Iran-Contra, 9/11, and now Iraq. You can count on this evil old bastard. Just put him in a chairmanship position and say, okay, Lee, do it again. Now, those are the co-chairs, and we'll have some of the board members when we come back, and you're going to gag. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
I don't care what it is, I will step right in it. Before I'd vote for Bill Bennett. They'll take over the world if we let them. They'd like to take over the world, I'm not kidding. Smart but unenlightened.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Just to let you know, since this is the new network setup, eventually there'll be some music feed here or something. That's why, unfortunately, it's not feeding you audio at this point.
But it's not dead air.
No. It's on. It's switched off. It's switched off the board, and it's running on another switch.
Okay, cool.
So we're going to figure out something so something's fed so you don't... I don't have to sit here and say the alphabet for 5 minutes. But
will this be during the whole break?
Well, and for tonight, unfortunately.
Just the local breaks.
Just the network breaks.
Okay.
The local breaks, I can bring up the Simeon when the local break plays. So it's just during the network spots.
All right.
Because the Simeon should, if we wait here about another 50 seconds, we should hear something. That'll be the affiliate program running.
Okay, just remember, the best surprise is no surprise.
Absolutely.
We had no idea what was
happening. I'm sorry, I knew the minute it went dead, you didn't know, and I had to talk to you as soon as possible, and I had to clarify it with Billy what to tell you, okay. Why there was nothing there.
We're just like, oh my God.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Lightning struck Phoenix. It got us last, or tree, or whatever the hell that was on Thursday, or Wednesday, but okay.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
right.
So let's, about another 20 seconds here, let's, if this is working correctly,
okay.
This should fire and we should both be able to hear something, and then we'll figure
this
out.
This will be the newscast.
Yes, right? This should be.
Job because I've got great advice and advisors to whom I get good advice from great advisors to whom I listen.
Oh. 26 before the hour. Okay, I want to finish this up and then we're going to take some calls. This is on the Iraq Study Group, or ISG, the so-called bipartisan task force on Iraq that's going to release its report. December 6th, which is what, next week? Well, obviously next week. So you know who the co-chairs are now of the Iraq Study Group, James Baker and Lee Hamilton. Here are some of the members. Edwin Meese, the former Reagan administration attorney general. Now, in addition to facilitating many aspects of the Iran-Contra CIA drug trafficking operations of the 80s and early 90s, Meese is implicated in the crimes related to Promise software, including the Inslaw scandal. Do you all remember that? And the murder of Danny Casolaro. Did these names mean anything? I hope so. You can get this report, by the way. Global Research is the address, and it's a report by Larry Chin. And just go to globalresearch.ca. Edwin Meese, Lawrence Eagleburger. Former Reagan-Bush Secretary of State, another Iran-Contra insider, in line with the ideas of Baker, Scowcroft, Kissinger, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, Eagleburger has been a blunt and outspoken critic of the so-called bungled Bush-Cheney occupation. Eagleburger replaced former CIA Director Robert Gates, who's been nominated to replace Donald Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense. And if you've seen Eagleburger on television, you know how weird this guy is. So far, we have one, two, three out of four of these guys, or all four, James Baker, Lee Hamilton, Ed Meese, and Lawrence Eagleburger, were all involved up to their eyeballs in the slaughter of hundreds of thousands of people in Central America. These are killers. You know, I say this all the time. These are murders. These are killers. And you know, I sometimes get the impression, maybe it's just me, but I get the impression a lot of people that hear the program say, Jesus Christ, what do you mean? Well, Malloy thinks everybody's a killer. No, not true. Not true. But the ones associated with Iran-Contra were. And when you stop and think how many people are actively involved in the Bush government, the Bush crime family, who were involved in Iran-Contra, in the slaughter and the death squads, it's astonishing in Central America. It's astonishing. After Lawrence Eagleburger, we have William Perry. He is former Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton, is a legendary proponent of all-out military force and even nuclear confrontation. He doesn't care. This guy doesn't care. He doesn't give a tinker's damn. Kill them all. Let God sort them out. Vernon Jordan. You talk about a hanger-on. He is the legendary Jimmy Carter, Clinton family, confidant, advisor, and Washington insider, and damage control specialist. And he's now the senior managing director of the investment firm Lazard Freres and Company. He's a money manager. What the hell is he? Well, never mind. Sandra Day O'Connor, she's in the Iraq Study Group, former Supreme Court Justice, the driving force behind the stolen election of 2000 that put Bush Jr. in office. Now, do you remember the reports that when she was informed that Al Gore had won, which is what really happened, O'Connor gasped, "Oh, that's terrible," and promptly headed the Supreme Court chambers to illegally stop it. Sandra Day O'Connor, I know a lot of people like to consider her a moderate. Sandra Day O'Connor is a Nazi. She is as much of a right-wing neocon killer attack dog as any of these men. So, you know, when you talk about Oliver North and Elliot Abrams and Negroponte and Eagle Burger and the rest of these people, Sandra Day O'Connor, she's right in there with Madeleine Albright. These are killer people. Other directors on the Iraq Study Group include former U.S. Senator, Republican Alan Simpson, a classic obstructionist who provided political cover for a host of Reagan-Bush-era scandals. Chuck Robb, who was caught with his dinghy hanging out in how many motel rooms with people other than his wife. And, of course, the ubiquitous Democratic Party insider and former White House chief of staff, a guy who I particularly am getting very sick of seeing, Leon Panetta. What a gang of dolts. Does anybody listening think that this crew is going to come up with anything other than a way to sustain the murder and the mayhem in Iraq in a manner that gives George Bush cover? Do any of you listening to this believe that any of these people, A, believe we shouldn't have gone there to begin with, and now B, believe we have any intention of coming out? The answer is no and no. Now, just a little bit more on the Iraq Study Group. It's structured around working groups, which deliberate on four aspects of the Iraq occupation: military and security, economy and reconstruction, political development, and strategic environment. The membership of the working groups is thoroughly dominated by figures from neocon, military intelligence-related Western think tanks, and outright intelligence fronts, including the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the RAND Corporation, the Heritage Foundation, the Hoover Institute, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Brookings Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, the James Baker Institute for Public Policy, and National Defense University. There are also officers with Bechtel and Citigroup involved. Now, if you want to see how the working groups break down, go to the article. And again, you can find it at globalresearch.ca. And it's the article written about this by Larry Chin. Now, Chin finishes up by pointing this out. Given its despicable leaders and unsavory composition, the Iraq Study Group does not represent a change of course, but an extension of a very old and familiar map of war and conquest across the Middle East and Eurasian subcontinent, a very old Cold War agenda to head off the perceived threats posed by China and Russia. There is not one member of the Iraq Study Group who represents alternative viewpoints or opposition to Anglo-American geostrategic policy. There are no Iraqis, no one from the Middle East or Central Asia. There is not one member who represents the views of the people whose lives and nations are being, quote, managed, end quote. It is, like the 9/11 Commission, a cover-up. It is a damage control apparatus designed to salvage the disastrous and politically embarrassing and untenable Bush-Cheney stewardship of the war by putting the war on terrorism back on what the American Empire's elites view to be its originally planned course, which is the bipartisan consensus reached immediately after 9/11. It is elites and political criminals talking to each other, hatching new schemes among themselves. This constitutes study? So you need to take a look. Larry Chin at globalresearch.ca. And I bring this up because I think it's scheduled for release December 6th, which is, what is it, Kathy, Wednesday or Thursday coming? The recommendations of the Iraq Study Group.
Yes.
No one from Iraq in on that study group. Oh, my God. All right, let's do some quick phone calls here. Clint in Dearborn, Michigan, one of our regular correspondents. Hey, Clint.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Before I forget, say hello to Kathy and Molly for me.
I'll do it. Kathy has just heard you, and Molly is, thank God or Goddess, asleep.
That's good. Yeah, I you know, had to call in because I haven't called in since you've been on Nova M.
That's true. That's true.
And, of course, I'm usually working at the time. But, yeah, when you said about these the Bushes and Gonzalez saying, we're going to do new things and things, you know, we're going to do good things. I'm just thinking, when? The Bush family throughout their history has never done anything good, and you and I know that, and all your listeners know that.
The Bush family itself, they are users, takers, they...
They're a disaster area.
Yeah, and they've managed to get wealthy on the blood and mm-hmm. broken bodies of millions of people around the planet. This is a truly an evil family. It's just evil.
Yeah. It just amazes me because, you know, they're like, to me, they're like some bad personal disease that you keep trying to, you know, get rid of, and it keeps coming back, you know?
I hear you. All right, Clint, good to hear from you. Thanks for your contributions to the program, and we'll talk again, all right?
Okay, take care.
All right, pal. You
Bye.
Too. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Okay, we're into that 60-second network break.
Okay.
And then once the local comes up, we'll bring those bots up, and that'll feed you into coming back.
Alrighty.
Actually, you can probably leave that up a little bit, no? Because it'll just start.
Yeah, I just have to have that down with the liner fires, because that's when they heard that liner before. That's
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we should have feedback here in 10 seconds.
Okay.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Yvonne is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Yvonne.
Oh, I cannot believe I am talking to you.
Well, actually, you're not. You're talking to a recording of me.
Listen, Mike, just so you know, we're out here and we're listening.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because
this is
a two-way street. If we don't have an audience, we're gone.
You know, Mike, I there's so much I want to say to you, but I'm not going to waste time. I just want to say that you, Bush handpicked that little group.
Yeah.
He's coming in, his dad.
Well, Cheney, I think Herbert Walker, you mean Pappy Bush handpicked the group.
Yes.
Yeah, right. You're absolutely right.
My husband says, yeah, when 9/11 happened, that he had his daddy on the phone. Daddy, I'm in deep, you know what.
Right.
And then this is these people are they're handpicked by him. And you talked about Iran-Contra. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Reagan went to the Congress and said, I want $100 million to help over here. And they said, no.
Right. So then we started
put all
making
this dirty stuff together.
Yeah.
So they could get the money.
Well, this is where George Herbert Walker Bush and Oliver North and Negroponte and Elliot Abrams and I mean the list goes on and on. John Poindexter, all of those people who are now deeply embedded in the current Bush administration, they got busy raising money through illegal drug dealing, through dealing with through the Israelis with this guy Manoucher Gorbanifar, who was an Iranian arms dealer. We traded TOW missiles for hostages. I mean, it was.
Remember Hassenfuss?
Eugene Hassenfuss. He was the one that was shot down in Nicaragua and had Bush's phone number in his shirt pocket. And that's what blew it open. Robert Perry.
Yeah.
Who writes now for consortiumnews.com. Robert Perry was the one who really blew the lid off of that entire story in the United States. The Iran-Contra story itself first saw the light of day in a little weekly journal, I think published in Lebanon. And, of course, nobody paid that much attention to it. But Perry, who is one of the best investigative reporters in the history of journalism, followed up and really started uncovering things. I mean, Robert Perry, to me, is in a class beyond Woodward and Bernstein when they were at their peak. So and now here they are again. Yvonne, these criminals.
I know they're back in the saddle.
Oh my God.
They're so happy they got some. They're in some. You know what? So they can. They're all wanting to make money. And I used to think it was frivolous and kind of silly to talk about impeachment of George Bush, but he is a criminal. These
yes.
are all, like you said, war criminals.
They are. They are by any definition. And as
I'm going
long
all
as
over the place, Mike, because I'm so excited to talk to you. But oh, I can't believe every time I come home from work, you know, I can't keep up with everything, so I have to watch the last thing on the news, and I'm amazed.
I know.
And then I listen to the radio, and that's where I hear the real news. Because a lot of these stories that come on through the Nova
network
that I'm listening to all the time, you don't hear that. You don't hear all this stuff and all about these what are those camps where they take prisoners all over the world.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. In the 2 years that we worked for Air America, and Air America, I'm pretty sure now is going to be gone within the next 10 days, but in the 2 years that we worked for Air America, all of us that at Air America, with the exception of Al Franken, everyone else who worked there, we're trying to provide a point of view that you just could not get in so-called mainstream media, and I think we did a good job of it. Nova M,
I
hope Nova M is going to be the phoenix that rises out of the ashes of Air America. We'll see what happens with Nova M. But the other thing, too, don't forget, the way you can get a lot of information, Yvonne, is to go online. There are such good websites. Oh, my God.
I've been checking your website and Randy Rose and trying to see different things I could read. But I tell you, I have a little business and I work full time.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of time, but I am like an epiphany. I've had one this past month, and I just try to find every and anything I can read. And there's plenty. There's plenty of information.
There's all kinds of stuff out there. Thank God Al Gore invented the internet, huh?
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, Yvonne, good to hear from you.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. I hope we talk again. You take care.
Oh, I'm going to get in line. Don't worry.
Okay. Take care. That's very kind. Right now, it's really good to hear. Also, it's to hear from people in Phoenix. We certainly I think our satellite uplink happens the first of the year, right after the first of the year, and boom, there will be 15 or 16 stations that will represent probably a potential audience of 15 or 20 million people, if not more. Right now, we are pretty much limited to two very good cities, Phoenix and San Francisco, and the Internet. We're on the radio in both of those cities and the Internet. We also, it's my understanding, will be on both Sirius and XM, unless I've got that wrong. I think we're going to be on both satellite companies. So it's good to hear from people from all over the country. There's no question. But right now, especially from Phoenix and San Francisco, because those are the two markets that are getting the program via radio, right? All right, we have a break coming up here. When we come back, more of your phone calls and probably one or two emails. I'd like to get as many calls in tonight as possible from listeners because, you know, usually on this program, you know how it goes. You know, I get off on a rant and keep saying, well, we're going to take phone calls in just a second, and the next thing you know, it's 11:30 Eastern time, and we got 30 minutes left, so... 800-989-1480, that's the number. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Two websites I want to mention to you real quickly. One of them I talked about probably over a year ago. Maybe it was even longer than that. The newest one, there's a guy named Reagan Ritchie in San Francisco. He's got a new website, a blog site. It's Candor, C-A-N-D-O-R, Candor Candy, C-A-N-D-Y, .vox, you know, as voice. CandorCandy.vox.com. Check it out. Go to this guy's website. I want you to check this out, all right? CandorCandy.vox.com. And the other one is our friends who have FairyWoodland.com. It's hard to describe this. But Bridget and her husband make houses for the wee folk, for fairies. And they've just updated their website. I mentioned about a year and a half ago, and there are things to buy there. That's obviously why they have the website, and that's why they do this. But if you want to see something that's going to blow your mind, I mean absolutely blow your mind, go to fairywoodland.com, fairywoodland.com, and take a look at what they do. What these two artists do, I think you will be. I think it takes the pressure off. That was the thing I liked about what I saw when I first went to that website. It was like, oh yeah, I remember this. You know, from being a kid. Back when you could still, you know, walk across the grass and feel it on the bottom of your feet, or take a deep breath, or look up at the sky and feel the infiniteness of what you're looking at. I don't know. It's just, check it out, both of these, CandorCandy.vox.com, Candor, C-A-N-D-O-R, Candy, CandorCandy.vox.com, and FairyWoodland.com. And if you've got, you know, if you've got a website, a blog site that you you're real pleased with, send me a link. I'll take a look at it. I'm not saying every website that gets sent to me is will get a mention, but the ones that appeal to me, and that's, you know, that's not very fair, but that's just the way it goes. If I see something that's appealing to me, just like if you see something that's appealing to you, you're going to tell your friends about it. So that's how that's how this works. But when I went to candorcandy.vox.com today, I thought, wow, take a look at this. All right, not bad. Matter of fact, real good. And Reagan writes stuff, and you can comment on it, and I think you should. And fairywoodland.com, of course. Once you go there, I'll guarantee you, you'll sit there and stare at what you see. And if you stare long enough, you're going to say, you know, I've got a niece or a nephew who just might like one of these little fairy houses. So check it out, all right? I mean, just do it. Why not? I don't hit on you for much anymore. Back to your phone calls. Teresa is calling from Dallas. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. I'm so flattered to be talking with you.
My pleasure.
Listen, I have to vent a little bit. I wondered if what you think about Nancy Pelosi taking the impeachment off the table. And she did that before the election. I'm very suspicious. Do you think she made a deal with Bush that we won't steal the election and give you the speakership if you take the impeachment off the table?
I
just couldn't believe that the first thing she said before the election.
No, I don't think she cut a deal with Bush. I think she genuinely sees Bush as a threat to everything that this country should be. I think Pelosi has in mind her own political career and the political career of the Democrats and the Democratic Party. And I think she is enough of a realist. Now, a lot of people disagree with me here, and that's fine. But I think she's enough of a realist to recognize that if she pushes for impeachment, people out here in America are going to say, well, now, wait a minute. We elected you to get something done and to offset these Republicans, not to do this. Now, I think that's a mistake. I think in her heart that Nancy Pelosi knows that these criminals should be removed from office, not because they're Republicans, but because they're lawbreakers. Not because it's the opposition party now, the minority party, but because the highest levels of that party violated not only their oaths, but violated the Constitution, have committed acts that are impeachable as well as being probably treasonous. So I think Pelosi's rationale is she feels like she has 2 years to show that the Democratic Party can get things done, and they're going to focus on that. Now, I'm hoping that some of the people in the Democratic Party who are going to be in positions of power, like John Conyers, who I believe is going to head the Judiciary Committee in the House, I hope that they will say, Madam Speaker, with all due respect, we're going after these bastards. So, but we'll see what happens. But no.
So it's not too late? You mean they can still bring that 635 House resolution to the floor?
They can do anything once the Democrats take control, just like when the Republicans were in control, they can do anything they want. As long as they follow the rules in the House, and if they're like Republicans, they just write rules as they go along. The Republicans, you know, when they were in control for 12 years, if they didn't like the way the rules of the House or the Senate were set up, they would just change the rules, that's all, or threaten to change them. So hopefully the Democrats will have the courage to enforce the United States Constitution. If we don't have the Constitution, what do we have?
Yeah, because that means that she does not believe that Bush should be accountable for all his crimes and misdemeanors.
Maybe what she thinks is that somebody else will hold him accountable. Maybe what she thinks is after the 08 election, if the Democrats increase their hold on the House and the Senate and get the White House, which I'm reasonably sure they will, that then is the time to, not to impeach, but to begin the hearings that could result in criminal indictments. Once these guys are out of office, they can be charged with crimes here in the United States. A president or a vice president cannot be held criminally liable. The only recourse that we have in this country against a law-breaking president or vice president is through impeachment and then trial in the Senate and removal from office. And it can only be high crimes and misdemeanors, however that's defined. There has been an argument, an ongoing argument for 200 years, that a president can step out in the street and gun someone down, and there's nothing law enforcement can do about it until he's out of office. So that's why they waited until after Clinton was removed, left office, before they went after his law license, before they tried to torture him even more than he'd already been tortured.
I've been so angry, you know, for what they did to Clint all those years.
Yeah.
I mean, for 8 years they've been on his back.
Oh, I know.
It's just horrible, you know.
But
you know what else I liked about your program tonight? I loved what you said about Colin Powell. That's exactly what I have been thinking about, you know.
Yeah, you
made about him.
Yeah, I hate to come across as kind of a sleeping white racist, but
that was just perfect.
I will use those terms if I see somebody acting like a fool, I'm going to call him a fool. Hey, listen, thanks, Therese. I appreciate you checking in.
I'm so happy to hear about the satellite radio you're going to be on soon.
Yes, ma'am.
Hope it's real soon.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I don't have a computer, so I'm depending on it.
All right, you take
care.
All right, take care, Teresa. Yeah, I will call a black person a house Negro if I see that they have had an opportunity to speak truth to power and acted like step and fetch it. You damn right, I will bring it up. I will bring it up so fast. And if somebody, I don't care if you're black or white, if that offends you, then I have one suggestion: turn off the program. I go after the white people as well as the black folks. And sometimes I get in trouble. I go after the Israelis as well as I do the U.S. government. And sometimes I get my fingers burned. But I frankly don't give a damn. I really don't care. You know, if I ever got just taken out of radio altogether, I can always go back to telemarketing. Hi, Mrs. Jones. This is Mike Malloy. Have you checked your magazine rack lately? What do you notice? You know, that sort of thing. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Little piggies crawling in the dirt. And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Starched white shirt, you will find bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts.
We're on a scavenger hunt for terror.
Jesus. All right, very quickly, another email here and then back to your phone calls. This is from Reg over at TVNewsLies, .org? I'm sorry, Reg. Mike, the media are hyping this group. This is about the Iraq Study Group. Mike, the media are hyping this group as the saviors of the 21st century who will come up with a miracle solution to the fiasco in Iraq. The work of Global Research, that's who I'm quoting there, covering of the membership of this theatrical troupe and their true identities is very important. That will, of course, be ignored by the corporate media. I am, of course, reminded of the earlier Iraq group that was set up to perpetrate another fraud on the American people, the White House Iraq group that was totally secreted by the media and who still are unknown to most Americans. We wrote about this group a while back. But I'd like to refresh the memories of your audience about the White House Iraq Group, WHIG, that was formed to sell the war to the nation. We wrote in 2005 that the group was organized in the summer of 2002 when the nation was still reeling from the events of 9/11 and was largely distracted by the war against the Taliban. In charge of the setup was Andrew Carr, the White House Chief of Staff. Chairman of the committee was Karl Rove, then senior advisor to Bush. Together, these two opportunistic charlatans gathered the very best and most successful spin doctors ever assembled in one place, and the plan was set in motion. The goal was to market a brand new snake or a new brand of snake oil developed by the neocons who had come into power in 2000. With practiced confidence, they came together to sell the American people something they really didn't want. They plotted to sell them a war. Here's the list of the men and women who teamed up to sell us a war. Karl Rove, then senior advisor to the president, now deputy White House chief of staff in charge of policy. Andrew Card, White House chief of staff. Condoleezza Rice, then national security advisor, now secretary of state. Mary Madeline, political strategist and consultant, formerly advisor to the president. Karen Hughes, then counselor to the president, now undersecretary of state for public diplomacy. Stephen Hadley, then deputy national security advisor, now national security advisor. Louis Libby, then chief of staff and assistant for national security affairs to Dick Cheney, now resigned, founding member of the Project for New American Century. James Wilkinson, deputy national security advisor for communications, and Nicholas E. Callio, senior vice president for global government affairs at Citigroup. Anyone doing a search on our site for these thugs, you can get all the details at tvnewslives.org. So check it out, okay? Because, see, we need to know this. And as Reg has pointed out, as Global Research pointed out, Larry Chin pointed out at Global Research, you and I are not going to get this information by just, you know, catching the news or you know, scamming around trying to find out, Jesus, who are these people? We have to go do the research ourselves. We have to. Because they're not going to tell us. This White House group is, or the Iraq study group is already being presented. MSNBC is saying that the White House, the Iraq study group's position on withdrawal is the same as the president's. Now, we don't know what the Iraq study group's position on withdrawal is. We have heard rumors, leaks, and so on and so forth that they are recommending a redeployment or a pullback of the 12, 14 regiments that we have there. If that is the case, Bush has said exactly the opposite. We're going to stay here until the job's done. There's going to be no graceful exit. I want more blood. But the media, you see, are already trying to make it sound as though the Iraq Study Group and George Bush are on the same page. And they're not that, it isn't all that different. The Iraq Study Group just has a different plan on how to stay there, to stay in Iraq, to stay in the Caspian Sea area, to continue to get into entrenched positions so that when the rubber hits the road, as it's going to, between the United States on one side and India and China on the other, for what remains of the world's oil supply, the United States will be entrenched with military bases all over that part of the world. Now, you may think, well, Jesus Christ, Malloy, of course, that's a good idea. We got to have oil. No, we don't. What we need to have is new technology. We need to stop doing what we've been doing for 150 years where it concerns energy sources. Because they're finite. And they're running out. And maybe you won't be alive to see it. I probably won't be alive to see it. But our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids will. And if it gets down to bloody confrontations between the United States on one side, China on the other, and maybe India on the other, it's going to make anything we've experienced thus far in the history of humankind where it concerns warfare, look like a picnic in Central Park. We should be developing new technologies, is what we should be doing. My God. Oh, well. So anyway, go to globalresearch.ca, go to tvnewslies.org, do your research, Truth Seeker. Do it. Do it. You've got to know this stuff, because nobody's going to tell you in mainstream media.
Is done.
For more information, call 1-800-437-2423.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Just hypnotic. I liked it when it came out 20 years ago. I still like it. Back to your phone call. Scott is calling from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Scott, welcome to the program.
Appreciate that. Mike, first of all, congratulations on using the word media in the plural.
Right.
This is just the dumbest thing. It just occurred to me. I wasn't going to mention this earlier, but, you know, I've turned into some of the other talk show hosts. They're like,
well, it's kind of, yeah, I know it's become almost a colloquialism now that we when we talk about media, we're talking about television, and it's singular. But you know, I had a pretty hardcore eighth grade English teacher, and then an even harder core ninth grade English teacher who made certain that we understood things like that.
Yeah, but, the media is this, the media is that. I'm like, you is a moron. But anyway. Second of all, you haven't mentioned tonight yet how much you hate these people, so
that's
I can
true.
Do it for you.
I was kind of waiting until I really got cranked, and maybe tonight will be one of those nights where I won't get cranked.
That's two things down, two of four, and I'll make them real pithy.
All
Wait,
right.
I don't want to use that word. Bill O'Reilly used that word. Never mind.
All right,
number three, I don't know if you've heard about this, but I just got a little thing on the petitionsite.com about President Bush's new head of federal family planning programs, a guy by the name of Eric Kerouac.
You pronounce it Kerouac. It's nothing to do with Jack. It's spelled a little bit different. But, yeah, I had that the other night. This guy is a real piece of work, but it's in keeping with what the Bush crime family does.
Do you want me to inform your listeners? Do you have it covered?
No, go ahead.
Well, he's dedicated his career to telling women that birth control and abortion are wrong. He most recently was the medical director for Women's Concern, overseeing six anti-choice crisis pregnancy centers in Massachusetts, maintains a policy stating, quote, that the crass commercialization and distribution of birth control is demeaning to women, degrading to human sexuality, and adverse to human health and happiness.
Yeah.
So here's what I wrote in my on my petition. You can sign it and then comment online. I wrote, you psychopathic Bible thumpers are so obvious now. I've said for years that anti-abortion politics are not about saving babies' lives or preventing abortions. They are about putting a stop to all sex except that which is intended to cause conception. If you anti-sex busybodies really wanted to quell abortions, you would support every measure in existence to prevent unwanted pregnancies. How hard is that?
Right.
Sorry to yell, because I typed it in caps. But I'm so sick of this nonsensical rubbish. I'm astonished, as you would say.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
I think there are dedicated people. Let me rephrase it. I think there are people who are anti-abortion, who most of them are in the so-called choice crowd, because I don't think any of us who believe in a woman's right to privacy are advocates of abortion. That's not what Roe v. Wade was about, by the way. Roe v. Wade was about a woman's right to privacy. The people who head these anti-abortion organizations, however, their real agenda is to put women back in the box, to take away their it's a form of clitorectomy. There's certain sub-Saharan African countries that still practice that on young girls to deny them the pleasure of sex. In this country, clitorectomies are against the law. So this is a form of mental or psychological clitorectomy to say to women that all the things that are said to them. It's about control. It's of women. It's not about preventing unwanted pregnancies. Because if that were the case, as you point out, every single effort would be made to educate our children about the mechanics of sexual intercourse and what can happen, and then to provide them with any means necessary to prevent a pregnancy, whether it's condoms or gels or caps or whatever the hell it is, to make sure that wiggly little sperm and that pliable little egg didn't get together and create something then that has to be killed. So,
you know, and that's an incident that kind of almost segues me to the next kind of unrelated point, which, I mean, I haven't heard anybody bring this up, and I know I'm kind of all over the road here, too, but this is a real quick one, but I think it's urgent that everybody know about this.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've mentioned it or not, but the what they call the AETA, Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act.
Yeah.
And that law, apparently, because I'm a supporter of many animal welfare organizations to try to stop, you know, torture and mutilation and pain and suffering to
Well, be careful when you go creatures. Demonstrate because you may be charged with terrorism.
Exactly. Well, it seems that by supporting organizations that speak up and say things and do consumer boycotts and things that could conceivably cause a business to lose money, not talking about killing anyone, just causing a business to lose money,
right,
that could make me now an accessory to terrorism, so it looks like I'm probably on Bush's no-fly list now because of that support.
Probably so. People who, part of that act that you're talking about, I don't know if that's a subsection of the larger act, I'm assuming it is, and the larger act also includes the definition of further definition of domestic terrorism is preventing the normal operation of, say, a factory, which could be used against strikers. People who go out on strike are preventing the normal operation. They can be charged with terrorism. There's so much of this stuff on the books now that hasn't been used yet, and I think the only thing that stopped probably well-developed plans for their use was the fact that the Democrats took over the House and the Senate. And that
You know, one more quick thing about
sure.
that that people need to know about the way this law was passed, and I'll let you get going. But, you know, this thing was passed in the dead of the night by voice vote with probably, they said, maybe a dozen members in the House and Senate both. They didn't even bother to debate it. What the hell's going on here? What are they doing?
That's the way Republicans, quote, govern, end quote. They are sneaky. They are liars. They're total frauds. They're killers as long as somebody else is doing the dying. They're bad people. Republicans are bad people. Scott, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Where'd he go? Oh, he's gone already? Okay. Thanks, Scott. Further on this Kerouac guy, it just irritates the hell out of me. The last letter in his name is a K, whereas in Jack Kerouac it was a C. But this guy, Eric Kerouac, the New York Times had something in about a week ago. It said, when speaking at abstinence conferences across the country and in his writings, Dr. Kerouac has promoted the novel argument that sex with multiple partners alters brain chemistry in a way that makes it harder for women to form bonding relationships. See, anyway, the Times went on to say, one of the researchers cited by Dr. Kerouac has called the claim complete pseudoscience, unsupported by her findings. But the fact that these people say this kind of stuff, see, I mean, is it not a dead giveaway? Again, this whole idea of abortion, no one is pro-abortion. No one. What we are is pro-privacy. Stay the hell out of government. That kind of decision, it's none of your damn business. The whole idea of resisting women's rights, so-called, because there's no such thing as women's rights. There's no such thing as their human rights. There's no such thing as gay rights. There's no such thing as black folks' rights or white folks' rights. It's human rights, damn it. You know, I wish we could get beyond that, but we can't. This is America. But the whole idea is control. That's all it is. And this freak Kerouac gives it away when he says sex with multiple partners. Now, what is that? 2, 6, 20 over a course of a lifetime? Come on. Most of the people listening to this program under the age of 60, get real. How many sex partners have you had? Let me see some hands. Oh, my God, put your hands down. Jesus, I didn't know that you all were so horny. But to make a statement that sex with multiple partners alters brain chemistry in a way that makes it harder for women, women to form bonding relationships. How does that work, Dr. Kerouac? The Times went on to say, armed with these credentials, what Scott mentioned in his phone call and this what I just shared with you, Armed with these credentials, Dr. Kerouac has been drafted to lead the federal office that finances birth control, pregnancy tests, breast cancer screening, and other critical health care services for 5 million poor people annually, and to advise Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Leavitt on family planning issues. The Times goes on to say Americans who are expecting a more moderate administration in the wake of this month's elections may find all this shocking. But to the unchastened Bush White House, apparent opposition to contraceptives, abortion, and science was the opposite of disqualifying. It was a winning trifecta. Anyway, I wonder how many of you women listening to the program have had your brain chemistry altered because of your multiple sex partners to the point where you cannot form bonding relationships. Shame on you! Shame on you! Scarlet S, or what, Scarlet A, or Scarlet, I don't know, no, I'm thinking of Scarlet O'Hara. Scarlet A on your forehead! Oh, you nasty females! Multiple sex, oh, never mind. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Fine looking bird, isn't it?
Hey, listen, we've never been stayed, of course.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. You know, I'm really starting to feel sorry for Keith Ellison. I mean, as you said, he's the first Muslim congressman, and he's, I mean, he's an African-American, which means that he's going to be taking a lot of flack from the right wing on a lot of fronts. And what that, I can't I know you said the right-wing talk radio guy's name, and
Prager,
I can't remember.
Dennis Prager. See, he gets a twofer there. Not only does he get to display his contempt for Muslims, but he also gets to display his contempt for black folk.
Well, this isn't the first time Ellison has taken this kind of crap from a right-wing. Glenn Beck November 14th, he said, "Sir, prove to me that you're not working for enemies."
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
I mean, this is just ridiculous for me, anyway. I mean, I followed his campaign. I know I live in Texas, but I follow the noticeable campaigns. And I mean, the first Muslim in Congress—that's a pretty big deal, especially considering the racist country we live in. And for him to be taking all this garbage from the right wing, all this—I mean, all these lies and stuff, which I mean. The ones you mentioned are kind of humorous and sad at the same time, but I mean, it must be hard for him to have to deal with all these right wingers. He's a Democrat, he's black, and he's Muslim. This doesn't bode well with the neo-Nazis.
No, and what still amazes me, because I guess I'm so old that I remember when managing editors, whether they were at TV stations, radio stations, or newspapers or magazines, still had a sense of fair play, of putting people on the air or allowing people to write for their publications or putting people in front of a camera who would at least speak the truth. No matter what political point of view it came from, it could be right-wing truth, left-wing truth, whatever, they would still speak the truth. And that day is gone. Now, you know, this little Glenn Beck character and Dennis Prager, these people, and Limbaugh is another example, and Hannity, they lie. They come on the air and they tell lies that are inflammable.
I guess one could say that's part of their job description, though.
But that could be, and if it is, that's my point. Like Bart Kopp is fond of saying, he will preface a sentence by saying, "I'm so old, I remember blank, 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 blank." Well, I'm saying the same thing. I'm so old that I can remember when at least whatever your point of view was, your presenting of facts had to be facts, that not presenting lies and distortions and half-truths and deliberate misinformation and disinformation. And the person who started that in media to a tremendous degree was Limbaugh. Most of what Limbaugh has said over the course of his miserable radio career has been a lie. And it's not presented as, this is my opinion. You know, when somebody presents an opinion, if they want to lie, you know. But to present it as fact to these dunderheads who listen to him, or who listen to Prager, or who listen to Beck, or who listen to Hannity, or the rest of these people, that's the part that's just, it's astonishing to me, Matthew.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's good entertainment, just seeing, okay, that's a lie. Okay, and these people are actually buying it.
I know. All right, listen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, Matthew. Take care.
All right. You keep it lit.
Oh, yeah. The only thing that, or not the only thing, but the major thing that bothers me about these lying bastards is the fact that so many people listening will take it as fact. You know, I've discovered, and I'm sure you've discovered, that we are a nation of sheep. We really are. We're a nation of sheep, and for the most part, I'm not talking about you. I'm damn sure not talking about me. But we're a nation of sheep, and when a loudmouth, blithering idiot who plays right into our bigotries and prejudices has a microphone and 300 radio stations, well, that means he's got to be credible, right? When he says things on the air and you hear commercials come from Ford Motor or McDonald's Corporation or General Electric or what have you, well, that's got to be credible because those are wonderful American corporations, right? Right? It's beyond belief. Oh, well. AJ, who is calling from the Music Factory in New York. Hey, AJ.
Good evening, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine, AJ. How are you?
Good. I go by the Music Factory. That's usually what I use as my handle. Two favors I'd like you to do for me. First, I want to start by telling you that you were let go from Air America, and I went into shock. I couldn't speak for 3 days.
Yeah, well, me too.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank
I want
you
to do me two favors if you can.
I'll try.
I ask as politely as I can.
All right.
First, please don't apologize anymore for your language. Let me tell you why I say this, because you color within the lines that you've been given. Nothing could be more profane than what's going on in this country. Nothing that comes out of your mouth could be more profane. We need you to describe it for us. If we didn't want you to describe it for us and you to comment on it, we would be tuning in to other milder shows. So please, Mike, don't get yourself knocked off the air, but whatever the FCC lets you say, say it and say it loud. I can't stand it when you apologize.
Okay, I guess, again, I'll have to refer to my age. I'm so old that I remember when you didn't even say damn on the radio. You didn't say hell on the radio.
Listen, I'm old enough to remember Eric Severide, Edwin Newman, and Walter Cronkite.
Okay.
That time has passed.
Well, you're almost
the gloves have come off.
You're almost as old as I am.
And we didn't take them off.
All right, AJ, can you hold on?
I can.
All right, hang on. I'll come back to you after the break because I got a break here, and you've only been talking for a minute 30, and that's not enough to get it all said. So, all right, stick around, Truth Seekers. If you're on hold, we're going to get you tonight. We are going to get you tonight. This is not one of those nights where I say call in and I leave you hanging for an hour and a half. Okay? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. This is my favorite hour of the Molloy program. Friday night, last hour. Crack open a bottle of good Australian Merlot or Pinot Noir. And take a few sips while the program winds down. I've never been much of a wine connoisseur. I was always just Jack Daniels and Coke or beer. But the Australians have really, have y'all, there's so many different brands. I don't know why I'm talking about this. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But some great wine coming out of Australia. From Diane in San Francisco, don't forget the veterinarian that Bush put in charge of women's health. That's in reference to this other guy we were talking about. You can go right down the list, too, with people that Bush has appointed to, you know, people who lobbyists for the lumber industry in charge of the nation's forests. Remember Gail, what the hell was her name, head of the Interior, who was had been a lobbyist for the lead industry. I mean, it just, Gail Norton, it just goes on and on. The veterinarian, what was his name? Anderson. In addition to being a veterinarian, he was a religious wacko. He was, you know, like a Christian Taliban. Ah, man, the contempt shown to women, and I think that is part of what brought the Democrats back into power is the woman vote. The gender gap is back, and it never should have gone away. Where it concerns Republicans, Republicans will do anything in their power to control women, to deny women human rights, to make sure they stay, figuratively speaking, in some instances literally, barefoot and pregnant. And like I said earlier, they the Republicans are interested in performing psychological or sexual, quotes around that word, clitorectomies on American women. There's no question about it. Prairie 2 says, Mike, I don't know if you mentioned this, but Lee Hamilton, who's the co-chair of the Iraq Study Group, was the Democratic chairman of the House Select Committee on Iran-Contra back in the 80s, and the ranking member was Dick Cheney. Lee Hamilton has done very well for himself with Cheney ever since. Yeah. And this is from Francis. I heard you explain or try to explain Nancy Pelosi's stance on impeachment is off the table in response to a caller. But is he, I guess that means me, are you aware? You can write to me, Francis, when you send it to Mike at MikeMalloy.com. Is Mike aware that Conyers, too, said the same thing? The headline was back in November 10th, Conyers toes party line, no impeachment, yada, yada, yada. And then Francis Wright, the latest Democrat, I guess this was in the InfoWars article. The latest Democrat savior to flip-flop 180 degrees in light of their victory is Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, presumed to become chairman of the House Judiciary Committee in January. Conyers said today that impeachment of President Bush is, quote, off the table, end quote. Conyers said in a statement released by his Judiciary Committee spokesman, quote, in this campaign, there was an orchestrated right-wing effort to distort my position on impeachment. The incoming speaker has said that impeachment is off the table. I am in total agreement with her on this issue. Impeachment is off the table, end quote. And Steve Watson, writing at Infowars.net, says Conyers seems to have forgotten that last December he laid out the grounds for impeachment in a 350-page long report called The Constitution in Crisis, The Downing Street Minutes and Deception, Manipulation, Torture, Retribution, and Cover-ups in the Iraq War. And later updated that report to add illegal domestic surveillance. Yeah, thanks, Francis. I am aware of Conyers' statement. Matter of fact, we mentioned it shortly after the election. And again, I can take the cynical overview that the Democrats and Republicans are opposite sides of the same coin. I realize that that's probably more truthful than believing that Democrats are truly the party that I remember. I don't know anymore. I'm just as confused as you are. I've said so many times on this program, I have no answers. There are no answers on this program. If you want to provide an answer, fine. The next caller would just knock it down. I don't provide any answers. There are no solutions to this stuff. I don't know which way is up anymore. It is all just through the looking glass, Red Queen, White Rabbit. You know it as well as I do. The only thing we can do is to resist. Now that Democrats are in office, if they fail, then if they fail to make the effort, then there's a very simple way to handle that, and that is just to give the middle finger to Michael Vick salute, our Atlanta Falcons quarterback down here. Give a middle finger or a Dick Cheney comment to the political process and drop out. I hate to say it, but or drop in a way that's much more radical and much more revolutionary. Right? What are you going to do? Either fight for it or give it up. There's no two ways about it. So, back to your phone calls. Sarah is calling from North Carolina. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, Mike. I really am glad that Iraq is getting the attention finally that was ignored for quite a while there on mm-hmm. back pages of the newspaper. But while it's getting attention, I think there's something else that's happening that a lot of Americans aren't aware of, and that's what's happening to the dollar. It's dropping like a stone. The Chinese are selling it. I read somewhere that the Canadians and the British are buying dollars to keep mm-hmm. A panic from happening.
Yeah, we mentioned that just in passing, I think, on either Wednesday night or Thursday night. Sarah did not give it the attention it deserves. It's my understanding that at the last T-bill sale, so much of the world said no thanks because the transaction was to be in dollars. And as you point out, the British and the Canadians said, okay, well, we'll step in and try to effect a rescue.
The Australians are saying, I think it was the finance minister said that there was going to be a real recession in the United States, but he did not think oil would go over $100 a barrel.
Well, that certainly is reassuring. Oh, my God. Oh, I sometimes have to reduce this to very selfish terms by saying, thank God my mortgage payment is not big.
Yes, I feel the same way. I'm up here in the mountains of North Carolina.
I just
my little cabin, you know.
Well, you live in truly in God's country if such a place exists. You live in Western North Carolina?
Yes, I do, in Brevard, out from Brevard.
Oh, my goodness. That's gorgeous up there. That is such pretty country.
Yes, man. I love it. I lived in Atlanta. I helped start Atlanta Magazine many years ago.
You did?
Yes, I was the first person hired that Jim Townsend hired.
Oh, my God. Jim Townsend and his wife Hutch were two of my best friends.
Oh,
really? Hutch just died.
Oh, I didn't know that. I was in contact with Jim before he died.
Within the last 6 months. And, mm-hmm. and Jim Townsend, who and Bill Deal has died now. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll just excuse me for a second while I talk to Sarah. I used to be a contributing editor at Atlanta Magazine. Myself back in the late 70s and got to know all the people that Jim Townsend mentored. Hell, he tried to turn me into a novelist. It just didn't work. But all the people that worked at Atlanta Magazine. Well, Sarah, I'm very impressed. You were the first hire at Atlanta Magazine.
Oh, that Jim hired, yes. I was there and I moved on over to Forward Atlanta.
Wow.
And wrote articles at the same time. But
wow, that is great. Well, Atlanta mm-hmm. Magazine, of course, is different now from what it was back in the heyday, but talk about small circles. It's good to hear from you, Sarah. I hope to hear from you again. Okay.
Oh yes, Mike. I sent you an email saying I would follow you wherever you popped up, and I'm glad you're only on until midnight now, so I can get to bed earlier.
Me too. Thanks, Sarah. Take care.
Yeah,
we'll talk again.
Mike. All right. Bye bye.
I guess it's okay when I make comments that are just very narrow in perspective, right? Isn't it? Atlanta Magazine had a crew at one time. Well, We'll be right back.
Can you wag? Can you wag a dog?
One.
There's a dreamer. Man had an idea. He didn't like the way the cotton shirts that he wore absorbed, you know, his bodily fluids when he exercised, so he came up with a better product. It was so wonderful to sit with dreamers.
God. Email here from Jeff. It says, thanks for the breaking news, Mike. I thought the only thing going on in the world is an old medieval demigod traveling around in his bathrobe and funny cap, and the reporting of natural weather patterns during this time of year. It's enough to make me physically ill. Again, he's referring, of course, to the Nazi Pope, and he was a Nazi. I'm sorry, that's not an insult. That's a definition. And you know what was what purpose was served with Pope Ratzinger going to, or Pope whatever the hell he is, going to Turkey to meet with Muslims and Orthodox Orthodox Christians who broke from the Catholic Church 1,000 years ago. And what did he say when he was there? Something about the divisions within Christianity are an abomination. Two words for you, Martin Luther. I don't know what to say. Religion to me stinks. I've told you that before. So what did the Pope accomplish in Turkey? And part two, what did Bush and Maliki accomplish in Jordan? And the quick answer to both is zip, zero, nada, nothing. Yes?
What did the emailer say again about the news? What did it say?
Thanks for the breaking news, Mike. I thought the only thing going on in the world is an old medieval demigod traveling around in his bathrobe and funny cap and the reporting of natural weather patterns during this time of year.
I thought he was talking about Santa.
No, that's all right. That's all right. Kathy had a rough day today. Did you ever sleep the wrong way and wind up with a pinched nerve in your neck? I've done that before, not in a long time, but that's why she's being very quiet tonight. It hurts to talk. The Pope in Turkey and Bush in Jordan, what was accomplished? Nothing. That's pure rhetoric. I don't expect you to answer it. Back to your phone calls. Andrew is calling from New York. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. It's an honor to talk to you.
My pleasure, sir.
I was going to talk about the Iraq study group. I think that, you know, they have no intentions of leaving. I mean, these, like, proposals of pulling out troops, you know, in, like, 2007, whatever, they just, if they pull out troops, they're going as far as that base they're building over there. As far as they're going. I mean, they're going to need manpower to man that thing. So once all hell breaks loose, that's where they're going to pull at least half the.
Well, the other thing, too, keep in mind, the under construction is, I'm not absolutely sure of the exact number, but under construction are more than 10 military bases scattered around that country. And the Iraqis are simply not going to tolerate that. I mean, that's not going to happen. Eventually, when the civil war is has run its course, I think the fury of the winners is going to be truly directed at U.S. troops. Now, I realize that our people are being bombed and maimed and killed on a regular basis, but not to the extent that they could be if the Iraqis were not fighting among themselves, if the Shia and the Sunnis were not in this death dance. And the day is going to come when that death dance is finally over, when enough blood has been let amongst these two religious groups, kind of like Protestants and Catholics. It's disgusting. then the focus, the true focus, the unified focus is going to be on the United States, and we are going to have a death toll that is similar to what we had in Vietnam. There was no division between the North Vietnamese regular army and the Viet Cong, the guerrilla forces. They were both united in destroying our military, our fighting force, the invader, and they succeeded. And the same thing will happen in Iraq. There is no question. Are you still there? What happened to my caller? What happened to him? He's gone? All right. Well, I'm just going on and on here. Kirk is calling from Worcester, Mass. Hey, Kirk.
Hi, Mike. Well, first of all, a correction on the amount of permanent bases. I have a friend named Richard who's, I believe he spoke for a subcontractor of Halliburton, and the subcontractor told him there were like two hundred bases in Iraq.
200?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hey, hold on a second. Hold on. I got to do a break, and we'll come back. Don't hang up. Don't hang up. We'll come back and talk with Kirk. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Five, possible. Four, let them know you heard three, right here. Two, one.
Border to border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back to your calls. Chris is calling from Detroit. Chris, I'm sorry. I left Kirk on hold. Sorry, Kirk. All right, yeah, here you are.
Okay. My friend Richard said that he knows that there are like 200 permanent bases in Iraq.
That's just astonishing. I don't see. There's only 20 million people in that country. 200?
I think that's what he said. He spoke to, like, I think he spoke to somebody that worked for Halliburton, and that's what the guy told him.
Well, good God! I mean, nothing would surprise me. That seems a little high, but whatever. So, what else you got?
Well, the main reason why I called is, this guy named James, I'm on his emailing list. He emails me the names of the troops that die in Iraq, and we have just hit the 2,900 marker.
Oh, my
God. We'll probably be at 3,000 before the end of December.
I read in the New York Times today, they have a little section called Names of the Dead, I believe that's it, and there was a 48-year-old woman, I believe she was a captain, who was listed among the two deaths that were reported by the New York Times today. Now, obviously, that was not today's death toll. It was probably the day before or the day before that. But when I saw the name, I believe she was 48. I don't think she was 38. I think it was a 48-year-old woman. And when I read that, and she was from Brooklyn, and when I read that, I just thought to myself, you know, whose mother is this? Whose sister? Whose auntie, whose spouse? I can't handle it. But 2,900 now, huh?
Yeah, I mean, imagine all those families that we
without their loved ones.
I can't do that because I start imagining that and my mind takes off and I think about my children being killed by bombings or my children being killed in a combat situation and I can't. I can't think about that. You know, I've said on this program before, here we are, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80,000 years into human history and we still murder each other for religious or political or economic ideologies. And I just, it's just unbelievable to me. Unbelievable to me.
Right. Well, first thing, the Democrats, we're going to have to make a lot of demonstrations in Washington, D.C. at all 435 district offices or at all 100 Senate offices.
Mm-hmm.
In order to really pressure Congress, I mean, especially since we barely control the Senate.
Yeah. What happens in the next 2 years or the next year or the next 6 months truly is going to depend upon the degree to which normal people in this country, Democrats, liberals, progressives, apply pressure. Because the Republicans, these murderous, unconscionable, zombie bastards, just because they've lost the House and the Senate, don't forget, all this political stuff to these Republicans is nothing more than a soccer game or a football game or a baseball game. We got to dig in and take over again. We got to prove that this was just an aberration, this Democrats getting control of the House and Senate again. So I think what people who love this country and respect this country and our institutions, what we have to do, whether it's bringing the troops home from Iraq or undoing the damage Bush has done to the regulatory agencies, we have to focus on these Democratic members of the House and the Senate. To hell with the Republicans, they don't exist. To hell with Sean Hannity and Limbaugh and Savage and Prager and the rest of these punk thug asses. To hell with them. And to hell with the Republicans in Congress. They don't count. What we have to do is focus on the Democrats and apply the pressure. And if that means...
Well, it's Ron Paul, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying if that means showing up in groups of 100, 200, 1,000 at all of their home district offices, if they're in the House or their Senate district offices, Senate offices, if they're in the Senate, or even en masse in D.C. I mean, it has to be done. If this fails, it's not going to be because of Nancy Pelosi or John Conyers or Henry Waxman. It's going to be because we Americans said, okay, it's all over. We got the House and Senate back. We can relax. That is a major mistake to think that way.
Right.
All right. Listen, thanks. I appreciate it, Kirk. Take care. Thanks for checking in. Let's go to Chris Chris in Detroit now. Chris, welcome, Chris, to the program.
Thank you, Mike. First, I've got a few things. I'm going to go through them quick.
Okay.
First, you are awesome.
You got to go to your issues. You know I hate that.
Okay. All right. I'll leave it at that. It was Peter Werbe that introduced you to me, and I could never repay him for that. The next
Peter's awesome.
Oh, he sure is. He is. I've listened to him for like 20 years, and I've been listening to you for about the last two. Anyways, 9/11 is the entire key. That's when the wagon wheels fell off, and we've had all of this monstrosity heaped upon us like we never dreamed in our wildest nightmares it could be.
That's true.
9/11 is the key, and to any Bush heads out there still in denial about it. I'm not going to say who I think is behind 9/11, but anybody with a brain, any patriot that has had the spine to do just a modicum of research on the internet can cite hundreds of different avenues that uncover that the official story simply doesn't wash.
Right.
And to say that we can't worry about impeachment right now, I don't believe that. I think that right now is the time that these people, the Democrats that are going into power, they have to start from this place of, look, we've been like a pansy farm for the last how many years, and everybody thinks we're so indecisive, and that's why they wouldn't vote for us and all this other stuff, aside from the screwed elections. we need to go after the throats of these people and just uncover the whole thing, because this country's never going to move forward. We're always going to be living under, well, we do this because of the war on terror. Why is the war on terror? Oh, 9/11, 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until we uncover that great big gaping tumor in everybody's living room that is 9/11, we're not going to go forward. And when people say the country couldn't handle that, that's a load of crap. The country can handle it. I think most of this country is boiling under the surface over just basically the no-talk rule
mm-hmm.
that has existed, imposed upon us, like we're all living in an alcoholic family. And finally, my question to you is, without, you know, asking you who you think is really behind 9/11, assuming the 9/11 story is not what they say it is, why is all of this happening? Is it truly because there are limited oil supplies and this is what they needed to put in front of our eyes for us to support them trying to secure?
Well, let me interrupt.
Okay.
The answer is very quick. I don't think it has that much to do with oil, although oil certainly is one of the key elements. It has,
okay.
It has to do with power.
Just power?
Just power, sure.
It's not, because I've wondered many times. Hey,
I mean, that's my uneducated opinion. I am not schooled in this sort of global psychology or the mind of tyrants and dictators and power-mad individuals. But from the standpoint of a normal common American, i.e. me, it has to do with power. It's this lust for power that, mm-hmm. that certainly is a... it's a human a fallacy, I would call it a fallacy.
Do you agree that the so-called Patriot Act and all of their deregulations of this, that, and the other thing, don't you agree that all of those things have to be scrapped when we get some honest leaders?
Well, I do. I do. There are ways to defend. I'm not so naive as to believe or to say on this program that terrorism as an instrument of trying to change policy, does not exist. Of course, it exists.
Sure, it does.
But terrorism is not new. What makes it new is that the Bush crime family has given it a global reach with our invasion of Afghanistan,
right.
our invasion of Iraq, our mistreatment
right.
of the Palestinians, our refusal to acknowledge. That these issues in the Middle East have to be settled.
Right. It's like they want to increase terrorism so they can have something to keep us all.
Well, I agree. I agree.
Scared of and all that stuff. I've been sick about this since it took me 2 weeks after 9/11 before I started figuring out, wait a minute, I know better than this. And then I started digging in to info and it became very apparent. And it just seems like we've been living in a rabbit hole ever since.
I hear you. I hear you. Chris,
thanks a lot.
Got a boogie. Thanks a lot for checking in. Take care. We'll talk again. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. That's why I'm spitting cyanide each and every verse. I see the Carlisle Group and Harris bank accounts. I see them plead the fifth each and every session now. Cause America's been took, it's plain to see. The oldest trick in the book is making enemy. A phony evil so the government can do its dirt. And take away your freedom, lock and load, beat and search. Oil, blood, money make these killers ride cold. Suspicious suicide, people dying never told. It's all a part of playing God, so you think we need them. While being ass-crossed, take away your rights to freedom. Bear witness to the sickness of these dictators. Hope you understand the time, brother, cause it's major. What would you do if you... It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew tonight. The program was engineered by Billy Foster and Steve Blodgett. In Phoenix, Ian Huff answered your calls in Phoenix. Thanks, guys. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall at markmarshall.com. handles some of the work at MikeMalloy.com, and also thanks to the moderators on our message board. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives the program, and you can get podcasting and downloads of The Malloy Show at NovaMRadio.com. Okay, where are we? Diane is calling from Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Diane.
Hey. You had someone call recently, and he was saying, well, we're supposed to be attacked sooner or later, aren't we? And there are people out there that have more than enough cause to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about it, and the fundamentalist there, I think through the BBC series The Power of Nightmares, were explained to be the same as the fundamentalist here.
Yes.
They may talk a good game with Sayakutub and all that, but they're like Straussians. They believe religion is for the little people.
That's right.
That they get their power through money and commerce, the same thing as the rich people here do. They're never going to attack on Christmas. I'm going to be very arrogant in saying never, because their friends and relatives are over here shopping.
Oh, God.
They own buildings. They own shipping.
Yeah.
If they wanted to take us out, all it would take is two or three container vessels.
That's true.
One liquid natural gas vessel timed. They could have done it over and over again. But as long as we pay obeisance, then we'll be okay. President Bush said, go shopping after the worst terrorist attack we've ever faced. Mm. Not enlist in the army, not stock up supplies, which would also increase GDP, but go shopping.
Go shopping.
The Secretary of, the Attorney General for Colorado had to go on his hands and knees to Saudi Arabia recently to explain to whatever poobah was upset that the son of a religious cleric who happened to be a punk-ass grad student who kept a slave in his home along with his wife and got convicted for that
In Colorado?
In Colorado. Mm-hmm. And just keeping a woman who was a guest worker would have been treated the same way in Saudi Arabia. No one has said boo.
Mm-hmm.
But there are laws out here, and he got caught. And because he was caught and convicted, Saudi Arabia was making a stink about it. Now, I know that even in the worst of Jim Crow, if there was somebody who was lynched, and they somehow were tried in California or a state that did not believe in Jim Crow all that much, they would not have to boot their butt all the way down to Alabama in order to explain why you punished the man who killed that Negro.
Mm-hmm.
They would understand that there's certain things that you do, but even a healthy dose of shame or discretion, at least, would prevent them from being so blatant and saying, the law doesn't work out here the way it does where you are.
Right.
And you still have to pay attention to us because we control you. The South was not that economically strong, therefore it had not that leverage. Saudi Arabia does. And as long as it does, and as long as they're able to bleed us dry through our own cooperation, selling us the rope to hang us with along with China, they're not going to destroy us. We're too entertaining. We still believe we rule things.
Sort of like a cat toying with a chipmunk or a mole out in the backyard.
Or humans. I mean, there was a research saying that cats smell, they grimace, they hiss, and those are the ways they talk with other cats. With humans, they have the language of meows, specifically to manipulate humans. And we think we're the ones who are in control. That's what's so scary about this, is that at any time, they could destroy us simply by the rumor that another caller said, oh, they're not buying our T-bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they have to do.
That's right.
If they wanted us dead, they could simply tell the docks to shut down. We would get no supplies. We would get no food because it's all out in the world. We would get none of our fancy toys.
So co-conspirators in keeping U.S. military engaged includes the oil-producing nations in the Middle East.
We're their attack force. It's blatant when we have mercenaries doing it, and it's slightly more subtle when we have our own armed forces doing it. And we say it's for oil, and yet we don't believe ourselves when we say this, because if it's for oil, then it's for Saudi Arabia, Dubai, United Arab Emirates. It's for all of those nations which we give our money to. And didn't I see the cost of gas go up like 13, 14 cents in the past 2 weeks?
Yeah, it did. Well, the election's over, Diane.
I know, but people were just so cute when they're saying, oh, it's going to be down for a while. And they forget it's like a balloon, so it's down with petrol, up with natural gas.
Right.
People, I just want to say, it's like you expect things to be different, and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I've said this before, but it would be wonderful if we actually paid attention to what we see and what we hear.
That's true. That's true.
It's scary as hell. I know this. It makes you want to vomit. I know this.
It makes me want to just run into the woods screaming.
Oh, yeah. And thank you for scaring me for the past two nights with the power outages. Thank you. It's hard enough. It's hard enough when rumors are flying about and then the power goes out.
We are in an area. Our studio is in an area where... There are a lot of, I explained this the other night, a lot of big old trees.
You don't have to explain it. I know, but it could be some like terrorist squirrel jumping on
never,
the wire.
Never happened, Diane. I'm fully armed. Hey, listen, got to leave it there. Thanks, dear heart. We'll talk
Bye.
Again. Take care, Diane. Y'all have a great weekend, okay? I'll see you Monday night. Take
care.
Thanks for participating in the program tonight. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Oh, yeah, have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
I'm going straight.